And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
Hi, I'm Paul Merriman, and I'm here to help you become financially fit. In this segment, I want to address how to avoid the biggest mistakes pre-retirees make. Now, first of all, I guess we have to define what a pre-retiree is, because in a sense, anybody who's not retired is by definition a pre-retiree. But I want to talk about that 10 years before retirement. Because those people are in that final push. Those are the people that we got to make doggone sure are doing all the things they can to meet their retirement goals, because they're getting set up for the rest of their life. This is the period where you move from working for somebody else to the point that you are now the boss and you are paying yourself for the rest of your life. So these are huge decisions. And I think there is one, or actually a couple, of goals that people at this point should have. One is that investors have a tendency to jump from one investment answer to another. They're constantly looking for a strategy that they can trust. And of course, Wall Street, they've always got a new strategy that they can trust, even though the last one they trusted has recently failed. And so Wall Street is always there selling something new, kind of what I call selling to the path of least resistance. Certainly, if it didn't work lately, then they're not going to be recommending that. No, they've got something else they've cooked up that will work. And in the meantime, the poor investor just goes from one great investment answer to another, but never finding the lifetime answer. I'm old enough to have been around this business since 1963. I'm 68 years old. And I've been around this industry since the early 20s. I've seen, when I say I've seen it all, I know I haven't seen it all, because there's something new to come. But what I have seen is that in the late 60s, technology was king of the hill. It was hot. And people, like they did in the late 90s, were rushing, investing all of their growth money in technology. And then they got absolutely blown out of the water, losing 80% of their value. Well, Wall Street couldn't sell that again, so they started selling annuities. And they locked people in these annuities to relatively low rates, and then there was this huge run of inflation. And the people who held on to those annuities had absolutely no way to protect against the inflation, and they couldn't get the money out of the annuities without huge penalties, or in many cases, they couldn't, period. Wall Street knew you couldn't sell technology and you couldn't sell annuities. So then they started selling limited partnerships. Something tangible, something you could trust. Huge, huge rewards for selling those limited partnerships. And a huge penalty for buying them, it turned out. And then, because people love dividends and big dividends and high interest rates, when high-yield bonds were paying 12, 13, 14%, Wall Street was just rushing. There was a path of least resistance. Sell them income, even though the income was actually in great doubt if things didn't go well. And some of those high-yield bonds in 1990 lost 40% of their value. And people were locked into these things because now, having fallen by 40%, imagine how high the interest rates at that point were, if in fact those high-yield bonds were paying interest. So I don't think following Wall Street is the way to find a long-term strategy. And the reason that this long-term strategy, I think, is necessary before you retire, Find it before you retire because you need to experience it. What a lonely feeling to get to retirement with your money and not have found something that you actually know works. I can think of nothing worse than no longer having a job and not having found an investment strategy I can count on for regular cash flow. So, of course, I have to build a list. I think this particular list, well, it only goes to 12. I guess that's one of my shorter lists that you have had to put up with. But let me tell you the things that I think you need to do. Now, obviously, I always say you need a plan. And I think that as you come to retirement, I think the plan becomes a big deal. A bigger deal, because now we've got to make plans about Social Security. We've got to make plans about asset allocation and distribution, but you need a plan. But let me tell you the things you need to do and not and to stop, start doing and stop doing. One is, I think you got to stop listening to the wrong people. I do my best to make the case for what has been advocated by University Street. And there are lots of good advisors who agree with me that the teachings from University Street rather than Wall Street is the way to find the right place to invest. So quit listening to the wrong people. And quit paying unnecessary expenses. That's number two. You can't afford to pay loads and high operating expenses and the turnover costs for actively managed funds. You can't do that for the rest of your life. The potential damage to your portfolio is huge. Now notice I say potential because maybe you will find the next Warren Buffett. But the odds are you won't. And number three, quit looking to people to beat the market. There is no evidence that actively managed funds will actually justify and earn those higher management fees. And I don't see any evidence that you need to beat the market. Now, maybe if I sat down with you personally and looked how far behind you are in the investing process, I would say, oh, I see. Now I understand why you have to take higher risk. But most of the people that I talk with, they would do just fine, thank you, if they got market returns, less very low expenses. And number four, in this process of cleaning up your portfolio for the rest of your life, get rid of asset classes that have a history of low returns at high risk. Maybe that could be justified when you were a young investor. I don't think so, but certainly the industry thinks so. But if there is evidence of 50, 60, 70, 80 years of low performance at high risk, why would you want to do that? Do you think somehow the future is going to be different? I suspect people do. And I suspect the reason they do is because somebody sold them that concept. Now, I feel this way about large holdings in individual companies. The great companies do not keep you from losing big money. Anybody who looked at the market for the last 10 years knows that many of the famous big companies have been just decimated in terms of their returns. Think of Microsoft, down over 50% from where it was 12 years ago. That's catastrophic to somebody who's depending on them in retirement to throw off annual income. You go broke doing that. So I think you want to get rid of things that do not have the very highest probability of success. And then number five, you got to add asset classes. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. You do that by adding asset classes that have long histories of success. Just as there are those that have long history of poor performance, there are those that have long history of great performance. And there are ways to put them together that not only improves the return, but reduces the risk. And you can't know, and I can't know, which of those will not live up to our expectations. But they don't all have to live up to our expectations. I look at that lost decade of 2000 through 2009, 2010, and what you see is the S&P 500 was a failure for what people expected. Remember, in the beginning of that decade, people actually believed the S&P 500 would generate returns of 20 to 30% a year for that decade that turned out to be either a loss or a break even. But well diversified, big, small, value, growth, U.S. international, etc. Things I've been teaching for well over about 15, 16 years now. But those portfolios in all equity made 7 to 8%, some cases higher. So add the asset classes that work. And all we can know about the word work is they worked in the past. And number six, treat every dollar you have invested as if it is the most important dollar, and quit playing with part of your portfolio. Most play money investing ends badly. I recently talked to a fellow who had one huge home run, and you would think that he would realize he won the lottery and he was not likely to win the lottery again. But he didn't believe that. He believed he could win one more lottery and gave it back. In a sense, he gave back what's called the house's money. It wasn't his money in the first place. He won it, and when he gave it back, well, it was never his in the beginning, and so what did I really lose? I just think that's a terrible attitude about the money that may be the money you need to retire on and last for the rest of your life. Number seven, make sure you're maximizing your contributions to 401ks and IRAs. As we get older, we are able to put away more. You can put 1,000 more into IRAs. You can add, in some cases, another 5,500 in your 401k. Check out the catch-up provisions. Check out the advantages of getting old. You can put more money away. Number eight, become savvy about the amount of fixed income in your portfolio. Super savvy. And by that, I mean understand the implications. Be intimate with the losses that you can limit with fixed income. You're not getting rich on fixed income. It's there not to get poor. But you need to understand the implications. An extra 10% more or 10% less, either way, you want to do that in a way that makes sense for what you're trying to accomplish. And number nine, don't conclude that risk is just about losing principal. the value of cash and bonds can be wiped out without protection from inflation. So that risk of not protecting against inflation can be just as devastating for people as not protecting against the loss in a bear market. I met a couple who in 1982 had all of their money in T-bills paying 12%. Could not see any reason not to just buy T-bills and in their retirement because they were short-term, so they didn't have to worry about tying up money for the long-term, and gave them ample income with that 12% distribution interest. And then they went through one of the biggest bear markets in history, the bear market where those T-bills went from paying 12% to paying almost nothing, less than 1%. But over those years since 1982, guess what happened? The cost of living went up and the return went down. That is as big a bear market as we've ever seen for people who counted on that combination to work for them. Number 10, you must know how much you're going to need to retire. You must figure that out today. That is, of course, part of that planning process. But how can you know when you can retire if you don't know how much you need? And that, of course, is going to be driven by your distribution plan. 30% of folks are taking out 7% or more of their investments, the value of their investments in retirement. Every study I've seen indicates that is a formula for going broke. Now, if they are wildly rich, then that's not a problem, likely. But if they're just have enough, they got a serious problem. And part of that is because a lot of people just didn't save enough, or a lot of people got into bad investments from people who took advantage of their lack of knowledge. And for a lot of people, it's because they decided they had enough when they really hadn't figured out what it was going to take. It amazes me how many people, when you sit down and ask about their cost of living, give me a number and I'll say, well, now does that include income taxes? Oh no, I didn't count that in. Well, folks, income taxes are a cost of living. So I do think that that is absolutely a requirement. You got to figure out how much you really need to retire. And number 11, know when enough is enough. Now, here's the way I think about investing. First of all, my philosophical approach is to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. And because of that, I've been too conservative. I might live in a bigger house, drive fancier cars, buy more expensive wine. I don't know what I would do, but I would have more money if I had invested more aggressively. But I always, it was a balance between getting what I felt that I needed to get to and making sure that there were not any catastrophic events along the way that I could address beforehand. And the second decision philosophically is that when I knew I had enough, even though I was already very defensive, I became more defensive. I passed the baton of risk to others. Let them take it. I don't need a home run anymore. I just need to stay in the game. And what I see, and I think this is a huge mistake that pre-retirees make, maybe in some ways, other than not having a plan, this is the worst. That is, they have enough. They have enough that if they went from that 100% equity to a 50-50 stock and bond or 60-40 stocks and bonds, that they could just sail on through for the rest of their life based on everything we know about the past. But it's hard for some people to do because they've been doing so well. Certainly in the late 90s, it was easy to see people who have been just doing spectacularly and they had enough. But it was almost like they wanted one more roll of the dice. I'll just try it one more time. And I say when you've determined that you have enough, then I really think that you need to adjust your portfolio to be more like. Maybe you don't have the ability to make it retirement like, but more like. Move towards what it would look like in retirement. And I guess along with that would be to putting this kind of this number 11 about knowing when enough is enough. Know when you don't have enough. That's the other side of that. The meeting that stands out so in my mind was a lovely couple from Oregon, teachers, who said there were three reasons they wanted to retire immediately. One was they couldn't take the students anymore. Two was they couldn't take the administration anymore. And three was even the other teachers irritated them. And when I looked at what they had, we convinced them, and there was another advisor with us, that we convinced them to stay the course and keep working for an extra 5 years. And that extra 5 years became magic, because then they did have enough, and that 5 years ended up working through the terrible early bear market in 2000 through 2002. So know what's enough, when enough is enough, and then finally, number 12. I think a big mistake that people make is they don't think they need any professional help. You know, there are dozens of mistakes that you can make. Taking Social Security too early, taking out too much, having too much equity, too little equity. I mean, the mistakes go on and on. And I think having a professional in your life, and by the way, I don't mean just for 1 hour session. I'm thinking one of the best investments you'll ever make is to hire a good professional advisor. Maybe it's just for a year, maybe for two. Somebody to make sure during that transition from work to play that you really get all those things right. I think if you do that, and yes, it will cost some money, that you will then be able to sleep better, invest better, and know that you got good professional help. It's the one thing that the racetrack and the financial industry have in common. It's easy for anybody to step up to the window and place a bet. But the reality is, from all of the surveys that we see, those people who do that intelligently have a much higher probability of success than those who have an emotional kind of a sense of what the best thing is to do. So my hope is you'll take these 12 mistakes, potential mistakes, make sure you're not making them, and you will be on your way to one very successful retirement.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.